Hey there, and welcome to the Voice of Topsfield. This is the podcast where we bring our community closer together by sharing the amazing stories, interviews, and updates about the people, events, and places that make Topsfield so special. We release new episodes every week, so you'll always be in the loop with what's happening around town. You can catch the Voice of Topsfield on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or straight from our website. Thanks for joining us, and let's dive into the heart of our community together.
Hi, welcome to another episode of the Voice of Topsfield. Today we are joined by Jake Monroe, who is the proud owner of the new bike shop in Topsfield. Hi, Jake. How you doing?
Hey, how are you? Thanks for having me.
Hey, welcome. This is going to be awesome. Jake, my first question is always, how did you get to Topsfield? And I know your story is a little bit different than some of the other ones. Can you walk us through it?
Yeah, absolutely. So how I got to Topsfield, I guess, isn't from living in Topsfield. I actually live in Beverly with my wife, moved there a few years ago. But I grew up in North Andover. But really how I got to Topsfield was by way of a career transition. So I actually didn't really expect myself to be in Topsfield right now or like find myself in Topsfield owning a business. But yeah, I kind of from a roundabout way of figuring out what I wanted to do with my life, kind of found myself in Topsfield, and I'm really excited about it. So yeah, I just recently purchased the bike shop from the previous owner, Dave, who moved to Vermont. And that was after me kind of finding my way in the corporate world and in software sales and marketing and the military before that, and just kind of, you know, transitioning into wanting to do something that I was a little bit more passionate about, closer to my community, and kind of trying out being a business owner, doing something that I love. So yeah, it's been an interesting journey to Topsfield for sure.
Yeah, it's great. You and I have come from very similar backgrounds and in our many different transitions. And I think a lot of people who might listen to this might be in the same situation where they're thinking like, hey, I started my career doing one thing and then did another thing. And then I get to a certain point where maybe I'm locked into that for the rest of my life. So I would be interested to hear how you went from the military to corporate America to owning a bike shop, maybe a little bit more in depth. Like,
yeah.
What did you like about the military? Like, why did you transition? And let's go from there.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, like I mentioned, I grew up in North Andover and, you know, grew up working for my dad. He had a landscaping company for 40 years or so in North Andover, and just sold it in the last couple of years. But grew up working there, working down in Rockport at a lobster company. And this was all through high school, trying to figure out what I wanted to do, what I wanted to study in college. All my friends were going to college. And I just kind of never really had that itch to go to college. I always wanted to kind of do something a little less traditional, like join the trades or the military. Growing up in Rockport near the water, I figured, oh, I'll join the Navy. That's, you know, be on a ship, something like that. Fast forward, I was in the Navy for about 8 years, was never on a ship, was always in landlocked countries and never got that life, but which is actually for the better. But yeah, I joined the...
What were you doing in the
Navy? Yeah, so I joined the Navy right after high school, had about a year after high school where I worked, and then I enlisted in the Navy and I was an intelligence analyst. So I was doing counterterrorism work for the Navy SEALs. So I did 3 deployments with the Navy SEALs. One, my first deployment was a SEAL Team 4, and that was in Afghanistan. And then I did 2 deployments with SEAL Team 6, one in Afghanistan again, and then another that was supporting Somalia and Yemen operations, doing things like drone strikes and hostage rescue operations and things like that. And then I transitioned up to the NSA, where I was doing cybersecurity work or cyber intelligence, looking at Iranian cyber actors that were kind of going after different U.S. targets and figuring out kind of who the people were behind the cyber attacks. So that was a really interesting journey because when you join the Navy, you get to pick your job based on what they have available. And they only had a few things available, and I had no idea what intelligence was really, but it sounded cool. And I always knew I knew that I wasn't going to be a career Navy guy likely. I kind of, you know, didn't see myself, you know, staying in for 30 years or something. So I was kind of always thinking like, what's the career that, you know, can kind of benefit me when I get out of the military? I was like, intelligence, you know, you learn a lot of technical trades, things like that. I had no idea that, you know, down the line I'd be deploying with the Navy SEALs, working with them, which was just an absolute, you know, really cool experience. And, you know, I wouldn't go back and change it for anything. So that was really cool. got selected to go with the SEALs, did that. And then the NSA, I wanted to get into the cybersecurity world a little bit. And it was kind of hot at that point where, you know, it was kind of taking off in the corporate world too. So I chose to go up there and support those operations and missions, which was fun as well, just far different than the counterterrorism work I was doing. And then after the NSA, that's when I was getting out of the Navy after like 7 or 8 years. And I didn't want to just go and be kind of a lot of the people that get out of intelligence. They go and they work at government agencies, or they go and do the same exact thing they were doing, but as a contractor for a government agency or something like that. And I wanted to go explore something different and explore the private sector. So through a veteran transition organization who I do work with now, found out that there were all these jobs in the private sector that were actually really similar to what I was doing in the Navy. They just didn't have the same names. And so that's kind of how I found my way into doing things like product marketing and software sales to the government and things like that at different cybersecurity startups and bigger companies like IBM and Deloitte as well. So yeah, it was kind of an interesting journey from the Navy to the corporate world. So,
and were you, when you were working for the corporations, do you live in this area or?
No, I was in DC. So my whole Navy time, I was in Washington, DC, and I would deploy from there. So I'd go on, my first deployment was 10 months, and then I did a 6 month or 5 month deployment after that. But I would always come back to DC. And then when I got out of the Navy, I stayed in DC for a few years after. So I was working for Deloitte down there, and then I moved to Boston. Back up to Boston and worked for IBM. And that's kind of what brought me back up this way. I was getting on a flight to go back down to DC one weekend after visiting family up here. And I was just thinking about it. I'm like, oh, my friends from the military moved away from DC. I'm not in the military anymore, so I don't have to be in DC. And I kind of was like, you know what? Why am I down there if, you know, everything I want to do and everything, everyone I know and stuff are up here? So I kind of said, screw it, and found a job up here. And you know, that's when I kind of got my foot in the door at IBM and went there to work. Yeah.
So how long did you work at IBM?
Yeah, I was at IBM for a couple of years. Yeah. So, and that was kind of the start of my figuring out corporate America. It was a big shift from going from the military, so much structure, to IBM, you know, being a big company, you know, probably as big as some government organizations actually, did have a lot of structure and a lot of red tape, but it was still a lot more kind of free flowing than the structure of the military. So I was kind of found myself kind of looking for a little more structure, or figuring out like, what is actually my job role? And like, I need someone to tell me like these things. But I realized that, you know, you just kind of have a lot of freedom to do your thing. And that was a big change for me. But I always was trying to kind of find my footing. And that's why I went from, you know, kind of hopping around to different private sector organizations. So after IBM, I went to a cybersecurity startup, and then I went to another one. And then I, you know, went and worked at another larger company, and then kind of went back to a startup, and was always kind of trying to figure out like, all right, where's my footing? Where do I like, where, how do I best support these companies with my background? And I never really felt settled, you know, I never really felt like, oh, this is definitely it. This is my job. This is my passion, you know? And then, you know, I got to the point at the end when I was at Recorded Future, which is a threat intelligence company, does a lot of dark web collection and cybersecurity work out of Somerville. And that's where I spent most of my time. And I was kind of ready to move on. And I was looking for something else. And all the job postings I looked at, it was like, seemed like the same thing, just at a different company. And after, you know, hopping around a little bit from different organizations, I realized that it kind of was like the same thing, different people, different company, different culture sometimes. But at the end of the day, it was like a lot of times the same feeling that I had about the roles I was in, which is actually what prompted me to kind of take a pause. And, you know, I talked to my wife about it and was like, you know what? Before I jump into another job, just like the one I had, where I was either chasing more money or, you know, a different position or title or what have you, I'm going to take a pause and I'm going to work at a bike shop. So I actually quit my job and just started working at a bike shop in Manchester by the sea, and was there for a little while and realized, you know, that, you know, kind of learning the business, learning, understanding it. And then I heard about the bicycle shop Topsfield was for sale because I have a friend who works upstairs. And, you know, I kind of looked at that and was like, you know what, I'm going to just try it out and do it myself. And that's something that seems like I can grow a business for myself. And it's something I'm passionate about, bikes. I've been riding bikes my whole life and around it. My dad's been racing bikes for about 40 years around here. So he's raced every type of bike racing he can and still doing it. And so I've always been around it, passionate about it. And so I was like, I think this is my time just to give something different a shot, you know, and that's kind of how I got to Topsfield and the bicycle shop at Topsfield. So, yeah.
What does biking mean to you?
Yeah, I mean, throughout my whole time, like in the military in DC, in growing up, like biking was like kind of the constant thing that I had. So I was always, when I was either deployed, you know, there was like bikes that I would find and ride around the base in Afghanistan, or there was, you know, times when I'd be back in DC, and that was my biggest release from like just getting back from a deployment. I couldn't wait to either go mountain biking or join a group ride or something like that. So really, it's, for me, it's a release and it's freedom of like, you know, when I'm out on the bike, I can kind of just let the world, you know, the weight of the world kind of go by the wayside and focus on doing that, or, you know, kind of just have some free flowing thoughts and kind of clear my mind. So that's been my biggest thing. And I find, you know, the more people I talk to, the more people are riding bikes because of that. And also just kind of now it's really the adventure of it too. You know, like every time I go on a ride, I want to explore a new trail, or I want to go on a new route, or I want to try a harder ride, or do something different with friends, you know, and always mix it up. But really, the freedom and the adventure, I think, is kind of the release is really what they mean to me. Yeah.
I think it's really cool because you and I do similar things in the bike world, right?
Yeah.
And I find it really satisfying to see people coming to biking for the first time, learning how to bike, no matter what age they are, or rediscovering it later.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think it's so cool, like, the cast of characters that probably roll into your shop and why they're there.
Yeah.
Like, what do you see?
Yeah, we see it all. I mean, we literally see everything from a, you know, people who race professionally, you know, we see them stop in that need either bike service or quick things when they're on a ride and they are actually people that travel around the world and race bikes. Or we see people that, you know, they haven't been on a bike for 40 years, but they want to go ride with their grandkids and they want to get back into it and want to find something just to be able to do that. And really, no matter if it's that professional guy I talked about, or these other folks that are kind of getting back into it or just getting into it, I think it's so cool, you know, seeing them just kind of light up and leave with either a new bike or a fixed bike, and just knowing that, you know, they're going to be able to go and use that, have fun in some way, or, you know, use it for the same reasons I love to use it. But yeah, we really see everyone. And that's honestly why I ended up buying the bike shop. Was I've always loved the shop location of where it was. You know, I've known about the shop, you know, growing up in North Andover. I would ride by it. I would see it in town. And I always thought it was so cool that so many rides start and end in the parking lot, right outside the shop. And not only that, but the rail trail actually goes, like, cuts through my front door, basically. Like, you have to walk across it to get into my door. And so we see so many people every day just out on their bikes, whether it's raining, whether it's cold, warm, you know, perfect day, what have you. And it's always so cool because we'll always hear a different story. It's also the rail trail, a lot of people don't know, is also the East Coast Greenway, which goes from Key West. So in the last few weeks, I've talked to a woman who was riding from Canada to Key West, and she stopped in just to get some food and to talk and, you know, get a little service thing. We talked to someone who was in a similar line of work in the military as I was, who was riding from DC to Maine. And you really never know who's going to, you know, just be riding by or stop in. And I just think that's so cool too, whether it's you're just having a conversation with them about bikes, or we're helping them either, you know, find the right bike to buy or to fix their bike, or just to get accessories because they're getting more into it. You know, it's awesome. So, yeah.
For people that don't know, what are some of the really cool things that make Topsfield and the North Shore area so good for biking?
Yeah, Topsfield is, and that's kind of why so many people start and end their rides here. It's the central hub of really all the disciplines of bike riding. So whether you want to go on a casual rail trail ride and not be buzzed by cars on the road and ride with your kids, you have that right here. You can go all the way down to Danvers or up to Boxford, or, you know, continue on to road rides. You know, we have some of the best road riding in Massachusetts right here with all the beautiful hills and going up to Newburyport or out to Cape Ann. It's such like an awesome central road riding place. And that's where all like North Shore Cyclists or the CCB crew or all these other groups kind of meet up and start their road rides. But kind of more what I'm into is the gravel and mountain biking and the gravel riding. You know, we have the Zoomies to Zoomies gravel rides, which happen monthly, run by Noah Levitt and Jonathan Robert. And they get a group of people that are, you know, anywhere from 20 people in the cold months to, you know, hundreds of people on these rides. And we ride from the Zoomies in Topsfield to the Zoomies in Ipswich, all through trails. And with different lengths, we just did one last week or 2 weeks ago that was a 50-mile route and a 100-mile route that hit all sorts of cider donut places. And there's such a cool just gravel community because with things like Willowdale and Appleton Farms and the trails behind New England Biolabs and all Gordon College, you can link together all these awesome trail networks that were either meant for hiking or horseback riding, and you can ride them now on a gravel bike, which is basically like a road bike with wider tires with some gravel tread on them, and you can cover so much ground and see like how beautiful the North Shore is. You know, it's just you're riding through some of the nicest areas around. And that's the same with mountain biking. You know, you can ride right from the shop to go to Willowdale or to go to Bartram State Forest. So really, I mean, Topsfield is the central hub for all of this stuff, which I just think is so cool. So yeah.
There's been a lot of talk recently about gravel bikes. And then I think the people who know gravel bikes know what they're all about, but there's a lot of people who don't. Can
Yep.
you tell people what gravel bikes are?
Yeah, you know, kind of like I mentioned, it looks like a road bike, so it has the like road handlebars, not the flat handlebars like a mountain bike, but it just has more clearance for wider tires. So it's like a road bike but with almost mountain bike tires, and that just allows you to be able to ride on the road but also mix in trails. And you know, I was a little skeptical coming from like being more of a mountain biker about doing it. The first time I did it, I was absolutely hooked. I was like, I felt like a kid. Like I was riding trails on a road bike, essentially with bigger tires that I felt like I should be riding a mountain bike on, you know. And it was just like such a fun experience to really kind of push yourself and push the boundaries of like what the bike can do, but also what you can handle. And now it's just like every time you go out on a gravel bike, it's just such a cool adventure. But I will say we get so many customers in that are trying to avoid riding on the road now. We just see, you know, drivers are more distracted. There's more traffic. There's been so many incidents of people getting hit by cars or buzzed by cars. And people are just kind of like, how do I either, you know, ride on just quiet roads, which is kind of tough, or how do I kind of stay off the roads, you know? And gravel biking around here is kind of that, the way to be able to do that. You know, we've had about a month or so ago, we had five bikes in the shop for repairs that had been hit by cars, you know, and it's just like, it's crazy how often we see it, and it's super alarming. And I think a lot of people are wanting to go to that, and then they get their gravel bike and they do it, and they're like, "Wow, this is the most fun I've had on a bike in a long time." And then we convert them into gravel, you know, big gravel riders, and then they also are like, "Oh yeah, maybe I'll try mountain biking too." And this, you know, might be someone that came from a traditional road background that probably never thought they'd be on mountain biking, but kind of gravel biking was their gateway into doing mountain biking. And then vice versa, you get these mountain bikers who are like, I'll never ride a road bike, but they get on a gravel bike and they're like, wow, this is so fun. Like I can go further distances, go faster, and ride things that like would probably not be fun on my mountain bike, but now they're a blast, you know. So definitely I have some, you know, some demo bikes in the shop too. If you're curious about gravel bikes, come try it out. Come to one of the rides. Like the rides that we do, the Zoomies rides are from the shop, or you know, all abilities are welcome. There's always, you know, different groups of people. It's not all super fast pro people. And it's like every time that people complete it, they're always like smile on their face most of the time. And just, you know, happy that they did it. Or they're patting themselves on the back that they did it. Something that, you know, was really hard and they didn't think they could do. So yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah, I think the coolest thing about why a gravel bike can be so appealing kind of everyone is to say you're coming off the road now, and the older you're getting, like you had mentioned, you're getting less and less comfortable with the risk of riding on the road,
Yep.
but you haven't lost that desire to go fast.
Yeah.
So a gravel bike, you can take that onto the fire trail, roads,
Yeah.
right? And just haul on fire. And it'll work, it'll
Yeah.
stick, right? So you get all that like remedy for your addiction on speed,
Yeah,
like
exactly.
without all the collateral damage of getting hit by a car.
Yeah.
And then the other side of it is like, you know, they come from the mountain bike side. It's like, all right, you know, the mountain bike is, especially the new mountain bikes, like so over engineered for Like I, you know, my mic, right?
Yeah,
Like
yeah.
I can get 10, I like, I'm qualified to get 10% out of that mic, right? So they're so over-engineered that it's like,
Yeah.
I'm buying all this bike and I'm using 10% of it. So, because like I'm not going to go down super sketchy single track, right?
Right.
Like I'm not jumping off cliffs anymore, right? Doing stuff like that. So I think the gravel bike is just going to take off because it's like the hybrid,
Yeah.
but it's just an extension of a hybrid.
Yeah, we get people coming in that kind of exact case scenario. They think they need a mountain bike because they want to go ride in Bradley Palmer or Appleton Farms or things like that. And, you know, if you want a mountain bike to do that, by all means, absolutely. You know, if you feel more comfortable on that, that's great. But we a lot of times are like, have you ever tried a gravel bike? Like, just try this out because, like, you'll still be able to, and then you can also ride on the road or do longer rides. And I think the main barrier to entry is that people that have never ridden with like the road style handlebars. And then, excuse me, then they get used to it and they're like, oh, wow, multiple hand positions. You know, I learn how to shift, learn how to brake, all that stuff. And their eyes kind of light up and they're like, oh, wow, yeah, this is definitely a lot more efficient than me riding a mountain bike on that stuff. And they realize they don't necessarily need to. And that thing performs well on it. That's kind of how they get hooked. You
That's
know?
Awesome.
Yeah.
Let's see. All right, I'm going to switch gears here. It's not switching.
Yeah.
It's the last sentence. So what are some of the, Jake, what are some of the things that you really enjoy about the Topsfield community?
Yeah, I mean, I think, so it was interesting because coming into a shop that had been established for, man, probably 30 plus years, 30 or so years with Dave, and then even prior to Dave Smith owning it, there was already such a good community built with the shop. And I, you know, kind of at first kind of felt like an outsider of like, oh, they're coming in Dave's shop. Like I, you know, I like kind of felt a little strange about it. Like this is all his community that he built. But then I realized it was just so welcoming. They were so excited not only to still have a bike shop there, but also to have someone, you know, passionate about it, but also kind of like reinvigorating the shop that Dave made. And I think the community in Topsfield has just been so welcoming, whether it be the business, other business owners around here kind of, you know, coming over, sharing ideas, trying to collaborate on stuff or help me navigate things, or just all the people that are, you know, just popping their head in to say hi and meet me and hear my story, or making sure that, you know, they're telling all their friends about the new bike shop and all of that. So it's just been super welcoming and supportive. And for a new business owner, it's my first business. That's been like the most helpful thing. And I think that's so cool. And honestly, meeting people here that I'd never met before, but also, you know, since I grew up in North Andover, I see people walk in the door that maybe are parents of people I went to high school with, and I hadn't seen them in, I don't know, you know, like 20 plus years or something. And, you know, I'm running into these people that they didn't know I even, you know, bought the shop. And now I'm reconnecting with people from North Andover and the surrounding area, you know, people I went to, grew up like going to church with in Boxford, they're going, you know, like random different things that like, I'm realizing that it's a small community around this area, and it's really cool because you kind of feel instantly welcomed into it. But yeah, everyone's kind of got your back and they're all wanting you to succeed, which is really cool. So yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
One of the things that is that your public service announcement, which I think is the first time I'm going to do one of these on the Voice of Topsfield, is I'm very passionate about biking. Jake's very passionate about biking. One of the things that we really both want is to people to be safe.
Yep.
Right. So one of the services that I think is important that you can ask, you know, go to the shop for, Jake's shop for, is a safety check on the bike. Right. And, you know, there's a lot of bikes out there that people haven't used in a long time. Or, you know, maybe they have got inspired again to get back out there.
Yeah.
Just bring it by the shop real quick. Have people that know what they're doing take a look at it, make sure that the brakes are lined up, that there's no weird cracks in places, which happens a lot. The tires are in good shape. And you know, just bring it by. Have them take a look at it. You know, you don't want your first try to back out on the wherever, the road, the trails, whatever, to end up in a bad situation.
And yes, we see all sorts of crazy things. So absolutely bring it by. We do a safety check. If, you know, if you end up needing a full tune-up, we can do that too. But we see bikes from all different walks of life and all different levels of safety, and some are more concerning than others. So definitely bring it by.
What's the worst one you've seen?
You know, a lot of the
safety sample.
from a safety standpoint, and, you know, this isn't just me being selfish because I want to sell like bikes that I sell, but it's really like the bikes that people get off Amazon, just how A, they come assembled, but B, how just kind of, I guess, for lack of a better term, bad the parts are on it, of like everything, even if you tighten it, still loose. The brakes barely work, you know? So like, I would caution people out there, like, just because it's a better deal on Amazon, bikes are, you know, something that either whether it's your kids or you, you're going fast on it, you're riding it on, you know, places that, you know, things are bumpy or, you know, things could fall off. You could get really hurt. So like, just, you know, before you buy that like $100 Amazon bike, you know, come down and we'll show you like kind of the benefits of, or the, you know, disadvantages of that. You know, those are probably the scariest things. It, you know, bringing in old bikes, for the most part, those are built like tanks.
Yeah.
So those are safe and sound. You might just need to adjust some things, but it's really like the new cheaper bikes off, you know, primarily Amazon that are the alarming ones, really alarming.
Implode. And especially when those have younger kids. I would say young kids,
yeah, but
like boys in between the ages of like 12.
Middle school.
Yeah.
We're taking them off jobs. So like, you're jumping on this thing, you know, or if you had, we've seen Amazon e-bikes in there, and that's let alone the construction scary, but then you have a battery in there that might catch your house on fire. So those are the scariest ones for sure.
Let's see. Hey. So one wanted to also go into the things that are coming up
for you.
But there was something that I had before then. The service, the safety side of it. Oh, okay. Yeah. So I saw recently on this post that you did on Facebook regarding donations to Bikes Not Bombs. Can you tell like kind of everyone who doesn't know what that, maybe they don't know what that is and what you do, and like maybe how they can contribute to that? What's going on there?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if there's bikes that you have that are kind of left over, or you're not using them anymore, maybe your kids grew up and you don't have anyone to pass them down to, and you don't think they're worth selling, we can take a peek at them. And then we work with Bikes Not Bombs and also the Lowell Connector. Both of these organizations, what they do is they teach inner city youth to work on bikes and kind of work with their hands, get them kind of certified as a bike mechanic. And then at the end, they actually give them the bike they worked on to be able to use for, you know, whether it's riding to school or just riding around or what have you, they get that bike. And then they also keep a lot of those kids on to refurbish bikes, and then they'll resell them that Bikes Not Bombs and the Lowell Connector in order to fund the programs. And then the third thing they do is they actually send a lot of bikes down to various third world countries to help them kind of get more people on bikes around, and you know, they'll fix them up or send them down, send parts down, all these different things. I think we just did a donation of about 30 donation bikes that they came up and grabbed. I forget which country they were going to, but they were loaded up in a shipping container the next day and sent out to another country to, you know, really help people kind of get on bikes and be able to have transportation in some of these countries, which I think is so cool. So yeah, definitely just, you know, if you have bikes that you want to donate, give me a call and we can bring them down and we can coordinate the pickup with Bikes Not Bombs. But I've been down there when I was cleaning out the shop and kind of renovating, I went down to Bikes Not Bombs and saw their organization. It's just so cool to see all these kids in there learning, working on bikes, and also, you know, just learning a skill that's just a really cool skill for them to have, whether they become bike mechanics or not. It's awesome that they're able to do that. And then also so cool that at the end, they actually get their own bike that they worked so hard on, you know, and kind of they're probably their pride and joy. So, and it's the same with the Lowell Connector and Lowell, same similar organization. But yeah, we love those guys. And, you know, a lot of people have these bikes that if you resell it, sure, you might be able to get a couple bucks for 20, 40 bucks or something, maybe not worth selling, not worth your time. But someone would absolutely love that bike, and we're happy to work with them. Yeah.
Is there any particular bikes that you're generally looking for, like little kids' bikes, middle-aged, like adult bikes, or kind of everything?
Yeah, it's really everything. As long as it's like a full bike that could be rehabbed. So essentially, as long as the frame's not broken and most of the parts are there, they're going to take it and they're going to figure out getting new parts for it or fixing it. So yeah, it's really kind of everything. So they're not too selective. Yeah.
Cool. All right. So that's going to be the end of that. There's anything more? Anything? Because we're going to do the what's coming up.
Yeah, no.
All right. Maybe so. How you're expanding. I think that what's coming up, like
a bit. Yeah, we can talk about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. Because I can go into something there. Yeah.
Do you Do you have anything else that you wanted to talk about? We haven't done, is this still going?
Yes.
We haven't done the just kind of high level overview of what you offer.
Okay. Yeah.
That might make sense.
Yeah.
Like sell new and like what a service. Because we kind of backed into the service side of it.
Oh, yeah. We could patch that in somewhere just like when Rebel is.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I can say something like that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
So when did you open the shop?
Yeah. So I bought the shop almost exactly a year ago. It took a few months to renovate and remodel. So it's been open. The doors have actually been open for about 7 months now.
Yeah. It looks beautiful in there. Yeah,
thanks.
And what are you offering there? Just a kind of high level so everyone knows.
Yeah. So the shop's now, it's called Monroe Velo, which is Monroe Velo Bike Shop, which is Monroe's my last name, Velo's bike in French. And then, you know, the bike shop aspect. So people know it's a bike shop, but yeah, I kind of named it that because my dad's been bike racing. My brother's been bike racing. I bike raced a little bit growing up, but we've just been kind of so ingrained in the biking community around here that I was like, you know what? I want to kind of have my last name be part of that. And, you know, kind of throw that into the shop. That is something about, you know, a little personal aspect as well. But really the shop now offers, it's a full service shop. So we have a full service area. So anything from a flat fix to a full, you know, high-end mountain bike or road bike overhaul, upgrades on your bikes, anything like that, you know, we take on in the service area. I hired two awesome mechanics, Ed, who runs the service area, and Finn, who's one of our other mechanics as well. They're just such experts and they can work on anything, you know, and they've done it all. And so from the service side, we do it all there. From the sales side, we're offering a little bit more in terms of bikes and accessories and apparel that we have. So we have a full line of bikes from a few different brands. So our primary brands are Giant, Salsa. We have road bikes from Pinarello, mountain bikes from Transition and Ibis, as well as some bikes from Marin and other kids bikes brands like Woom and Early Rider, which are really cool, awesome kids bikes. So really trying to figure out brands, bike brands that we can work with for a small shop that, you know, are kind to us, and also stuff that we also would ride ourselves, you know, and we can actually recommend to someone. And then on the accessory side, you know, we have all the accessories you would ever need, parts, tools, upgrades, as well as apparel. We have clothes and shoes, helmets, all of that stuff. So really, yeah, it's a full-on bike shop. And we're trying to, you know, in the first year, to kind of see where the market takes us, see what people are asking for. But really, we have a lot of gravel bikes, mountain bikes, road bikes, as well as, you know, your hybrids, rail trail bikes, all the way down to, you know, all sorts of kids and middle school kids, little kids, all sorts of bikes, you know, Strider bikes, things like that as well to learn on. But yeah, really just a full-on bike shop. So yeah, come on down and check it out if you haven't seen the you know, or haven't been in a while. Definitely want to show you around. So yeah.
Yeah, I think it's so cool with some of the programs that are coming out of line for kids now, like schools or around schools, like the Little Rippers and the Chain Breakers.
Yeah.
You know, like it's, if you're involved in any of those, thinking about being involved in those, like getting a good bike and having that bike be reliable is really important and really hard to do yourself. So, you know, it's something else to really partner with a local shop.
Yeah.
And they know you, they know your bike, you know, kids' bikes, like stuff like that. So it's really cool.
That's another point that you just brought up that I think is so cool about Topsfield or just the area here too, about that they have those like mountain bike clubs and just all sorts of clubs. You even putting together, you know, rides for kids that you've taught, or even just, you know, people gathering to ride with their kids and, or, you know, just get together. But the fact that we have these, all these offerings for kids to get on their bikes and like all the way from just a casual ride to, you know, actually doing mountain bike races, which, you know, when I was growing up, I tagged along to bike races with my dad and I'd enter into these like kids races, but I was the only one probably in my school that was doing bike racing. And now we have whole teams of kids at Masco or younger that are actually like out doing training rides, riding bikes. And I'm like, I wish I had that when I was a kid. It was so cool that there's like sports that aren't just, you know, team sports, or they have a Chainbreakers team, but an individual and a team sport. It's just so cool to see that there's actually organized like mountain bike clubs. I just love to see it. And we love seeing the kids come in and either fixing their bikes, which is inherently all the time because they're always beating them up, which is a good thing to see, or even just, you know, talking to their parents about how to get them out more, you know, how to get them more comfortable on their bike or what have you. So yeah, I think those clubs are awesome.
Yeah, that's great. And it's really cool. Like, you know, some of the options that parents have now in the Topsfield area when it comes to biking and putting their kids into different sports that'll they can be successful in. When you and I were growing up, there was really like a couple different sports, and they were traditional sports like baseball or football, hockey. Then soccer came in. But one of the things that is really interesting is there's a quite a few kids that don't really fall into those type of team sports. They have no interest in it. And in some cases, like with the kids, the work I do with kids with autism, they don't fit into that same team environment where people have to work collaboratively towards an end. They really want to be social. They really like being a part of the team, but they have it's very difficult for them to work in that sort of traditional sports like mode. And now, like, I think the closest when I was young, and I didn't get it when I was young, was cross country. Right? It was cross country. It was the kids out there that like wanted to be a part of the team but wanted to do their own thing, right? And now that you have things like that coming, like for biking and rowing and sailing and things like that, they allow a whole other group of kids to access activity, physical activity, which is huge, and also a team, and that might have 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago never would have had that option. So I'm really excited to see that happening.
And it's something they can take with them their whole life, you know, like they can be mountain biking when they're, you know, however old. But the one other thing too is pump track, I feel like has brought a lot of these kids together as well. I ride or drive by there, and no matter what, after school or on weekends, that place is packed. So just shout out to the awesome work for that the Topsfield Playground Committee did to get that approved and get that in, because it's one of the only ones around. I was talking to a family there a couple of weeks ago. They come every week from Beverly, like multiple times a week, because they want to, you know, their kids love it and they come over. I'm sure there's so many other families that go there from surrounding towns. And how cool is that? They're like Topsfield's place they're coming to go to that pump track because we have one. And again, it kind of expands the boundaries of these kids because it probably gets them out of the comfort zone too and helps them learn how to ride bikes more. Or you see the really good kids there that are doing the jumps and all this stuff, and you see some of the younger kids looking at them wanting to be like that. And it's just so cool. The pump track, I think it's a super unique part of Topsfield, and I hope, you know, that A, you know, sticks around, but also, you know, if they expand it or do whatever, like it's always going to be here. So it's awesome.
That's awesome. I was a skater when I was a kid, so I remember going to the half pipe as like a little dude and watching the big dudes do their stuff, and that's how you learned, right? There was no training for it. You just found people who were better than you, and you watched them and hung out with them.
Totally.
That's what the pump track allows people to do. And I tell you, like, I guess I'm pretty old now, 51 years old, but the stuff that kids are ripping off on bikes now,
I know.
like just is astounding. So, a huge shout out to the playground for adding that on. It's a real addition to this community. It's not easy, I'm sure, to get it all realized.
No, not at all. And it's still not. Like, they definitely, if you use the pump track, keep an eye out for any of their events where they need help either cleaning it up or doing maintenance days. They need as much support as they can there to keep it around and to keep it in good shape. So, and you know, many hands go a long way there. So definitely if there's days that you can volunteer there and help out, please definitely go. We'll be there too. So
Awesome. So, Jake, the last thing, what do you have coming up? The you personally, or stuff with the shop, or whatever, like, let us know about.
Personally, we're actually expecting our first child in December, so that's going to be interesting being a new bike shop owner and having a newborn. So that'll be interesting, an interesting personal endeavor there. We're so excited, so that's sweet. But so yeah, early December, so time is ticking there. But for the bike shop, we got a Black Friday gravel ride coming up. So that is run by Noah Levitt and Jonathan Robert again, Zoomies to Zoomies. So starting at Zoomies in Topsfield, 10 a.m. Black Friday, riding to Zoomies in Ipswich. It's about a 28-mile loop. Again, all abilities, you know, come if you have a gravel bike or if you want to, you know, rent one or try it out. We can give you the route prior if you want to try it out too. But yeah, Black Friday gravel. leaving of Zoomies 10 a.m. Definitely come to that. That'll be a really good group of people. The Black Friday ride always brings an awesome crew. And again, there'll be so many different groups there. So it's not like a pro race or anything. Definitely come out and join. Other than that, we'll be open and at the shop for the Holiday on the Green. I think last year we were there with like no bikes inside and maybe like a foldable table. But this year we'll have, you know, more stuff going on there, more kind of refreshments, as well as just things that, you know, holiday sales. We'll be able to talk about, you know, if bikes are on the Christmas list for your kids and you want to talk through any of them or for you, you know, definitely come down. We'll have sales and deals on bikes and accessories and things like that. So Holiday on the Green was always a good time and we'll be there for that. Other than that, we'll definitely have more rides going into the winter. You know, people like to ride year round, especially if it's going to stay mild, which, you know, I'm a skier too. So I kind of hope there's snow up north that also stays mild here. So I get best of both worlds, but we'll definitely have more. You know, I kind of really, in the first year of the shop, thought I was going to be doing weekly group rides and all of this. And I realized very quickly that I need to get my feet under me with the operations of just how to run the business and how to keep the doors open. So really next year is kind of my goal to, I'm going to, you know, really plus up on the events that we have. So weekly group rides, we'll do, you know, kind of monthly longer rides, all sorts of classes and socials and things like that. We've had a couple classes, which are awesome. Next year is really the year where I'm kind of expanding that and really trying to build the community more around the shop, which I'm super excited for. So yeah, that's kind of what's happening.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, this has been awesome, Jake. Appreciate you coming in. And I think in the future, we can probably have you come in fairly regularly, yeah, like once a month, because we're doing this bit now, which is some local business comes in, they talk about what's going on this month for 5 minutes, and we release it as called the Voice of Topsfield Events.
Nice.
So that allows you to come in for 5 minutes and just say, hey, these are all the things that are coming up, and that'd be great.
Yeah, that would be awesome. Thanks again for having me, and I'm down to come anytime. So yeah, let's do it again.
Dude, congrats on that.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
It's a big life change.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. We'll see what happens.
I've been down that road. Well, everybody, thank you for joining us for another episode of The Voice of Topsfield. Look forward to getting more people nominated to come on the show. So if you know anyone, feel free to reach out to us. We'd love to have them. Until next time, this is Topsfield. And that's a wrap for this episode of The Voice of Topsfield. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed this week's conversation. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Amazon, Pandora, and all your favorite listening platforms. We release a new episode every Friday, so stay tuned for more local news, events, and stories. Until next time, this is Topsfield.